Welcome to the Innate Vitality Code podcast, your source of science-backed information and inspiration on holistic healing, building resilience, trauma recovery, and self-love. I'm your host, Dr. Andrea Pennington. I'm an integrative physician, acupuncturist, and positive psychology neuroscience nerd. For over 20 years, I've been healing and teaching in my wellness practice, in the media, on stages, and around the world, as part of my soul's mission to end suffering and raise the consciousness on the planet. This podcast does not provide medical advice or psychotherapy. Consult your healthcare provider before implementing what you hear on this show. Hello, beautiful soul. I pray that you are doing well. I have an interview that I think you're going to want to tune into, especially if you have ever experienced burnout. That's right, I am going to be diving into the story inside this book, Holistic Healing, from one of our co-authors, Siv Harshta. Now, Siv has this amazing corporate background. She was a leader, an HR director, a consultant, and then as an entrepreneur, she's really focused on helping teams and large organizations reach their goals and improve, you know, their dynamics. But what's interesting is that Siv is also an adventurer. In fact, she is the 10th Norwegian to climb all of the 7 summits. That is the highest mountain peak on all of the continents. And she's going out for some other amazing feats like North Pole, South Pole, all of the highest volcanoes on every summit. But what's interesting is that not only has Siv been to Everest once, but she's been there twice. And she literally went blind before she came down the mountain. Crazy stuff, right? But all of that sounds amazing, right? Like this polished professional and an adventurer. But would you believe that just years before going to Everest, she experienced burnout? I really want you to tune into this interview because what's funny, well, maybe not so funny, but what's interesting is that Siv didn't even recognize just how bad it was. Other people around her were noticing. And I think this is a lesson for everyone, especially because oftentimes we take on so much responsibility. And if we happen to be very conscientious, we may overcommit. We don't want to say no to people, and yet our body suffers. So if you know anyone who is leading in the direction of burnout or in burnout, this is an interview you're going to want to see. Siv Harshta, it is such a pleasure to connect with you again. Thank you so much for contributing your story to Holistic Healing.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pretty amazing journey that you've been on these last several years. I mentioned that in the intro that you had this really great career in corporate. I think we should probably start there and then we'll work our way up the mountains. Does that sound good?
Yeah, good for me.
So one of the things that I think is so interesting is you didn't even really know or recognize that you were in burnout. Take me back to that period of time. What was going on with you in your job, in your life at that time?
You know, I've been in management consulting for many, many years prior to this. And so I was used to working a lot. And then I changed over to becoming head of HR in the finance industry. And initially I thought that would be slow down. It didn't really turn out like that. With many reasons for it, illness in the company I worked for and many other things. But it was a lot of work. And in my mind, I didn't have problems with working a lot. But I guess there was some other things around it that made a big difference from previous experiences with working a lot.
And part of that other was also, it was a quite toxic environment, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So combining the overwork and combining toxic people in a toxic environment. What, tell us about what happened. You share in the book that it was actually a colleague who first kind of threw out this warning flag that you were not okay.
Yeah, because I kept telling myself I was okay. I could do this, you know, I'm strong. And I even had a warning earlier than what I share in the book, about 6 months earlier than that. But I was like, you know, pulling up my sleeves and saying, hey, come on, you can go to work, you can do this. So I had a conversation with myself and ended up saying, yeah, I can do this, and continued. So if I had stopped at that point when the early warning came, it probably would have been a smoother and less heavy job to get out of the burnout again.
Yeah.
But I didn't take the signal.
Well, unfortunately, you know, most people don't. Like, we just think, okay, just suck it up. And in your case, you actually were saying, okay, just power through, because you had a vacation coming up soon, right?
Yeah. So I was thinking, you know, another month or two, I can do this, you know. And I was also constantly promised I would get some extra resources to help me out, which was postponed and postponed and postponed for more than half a year.
Wow.
So that was like, yeah. But anyway, one Friday afternoon, a colleague came into my office and say, hey, how are you? And I was like, I'm good. And he's like, yeah, but how are you really doing? You know? So.
And how were you really doing? Like, what symptoms did you notice in yourself?
Well, first of all, one important one was that I didn't sleep. I probably wake up almost every night around 2 a.m. and had in my mind all these things that I had to remember. And that was, you know, when you don't sleep over a long period of time, that is causing a lot of problems, because that's when we actually regenerate and our body is, you know, getting ready for the next day. So it's very important. Another thing was that I have started to lose my short-term memory. At the time, I think I didn't realize it myself, but I guess people around me must have noticed. Nobody really said anything. When we got to the point where I admitted that I had an issue and went to the doctor, I had a rocket sky-high blood pressure. Whoa. It was so high that I couldn't even go for a jog. Wow. Because it would be dangerous for me. And what else? I've you know, gained a lot of weight, which you normally would do in a process like this. And also that I couldn't concentrate on reading like a book or even a long page. But at the time, I didn't really notice that myself either, because I was constantly, constantly interrupted. So if I came into my office starting to read an email, somebody would pop up or a phone would call or something all the time. So I didn't notice until I stopped.
And so this colleague said, you're not fine. And he literally told you he didn't want you to come back to the office.
Yeah, or he said that I don't want to see you in the office on Monday. You should go and talk to your doctor. I don't like people to visit, but you should not be here.
But you also got another warning flag thrown from a family member, if I'm correct.
Yeah, so that was the same weekend. So this was a Friday, and then in the weekend I met with my cousin, and she hadn't seen me for a while, and she asked me, how are you? And I was like, I'm good, or I didn't even really manage to answer, I think, because she said, and don't lie, because I can see in your eyes something is wrong. So, yeah. Then I just shared everything with her.
And she was the one that also told you you didn't need to go to work. You needed to see a doctor.
Yeah, she said, you know, you need to get a break from this and get yourself back to the normal you. So
what happened next? For many Americans, for example, they're... Most doctors would probably give you an excuse to get out of work, but there's no formal treatment protocol. They just say, you know, get some rest, try some yoga, try some meditation. What did the healthcare system in Norway do for you to help you get back on your feet?
Well, basically, my doctor also gave me a sick leave, and we started with 2 weeks, which I thought was more than enough. I was certain I would, you know, be all back after 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That wasn't really the case. Well, when my doctor really understood the severity of things, she sent me to do different tests, for instance, like a cognitive test, and also a brain scan to make sure that I didn't get a brain tumor. So we did that, and the result of that cognitive test was the physician who did it said, you're in general normal, but I actually can see signs of stress over a long period here. So that's not good.
Wow.
When the stress is causing and affecting your brain, actually.
Yeah. And so I know that you also mentioned it was really hard for you to like not do anything. So to have those 2 weeks off and 2 weeks vacation, you're thinking, okay, I should be able to do something. But the doctor said no.
No, because I as soon as after the 2 weeks and then straight into 2 weeks vacation, so I basically have 1 month off, I was mentally thinking, yeah, now I should go back to work. But my body didn't think I should go back to work.
Yeah.
So I didn't sleep, you know, and then when you don't sleep, it's tough. Yeah.
Yeah. So we know that you are now the 10th Norwegian to climb the seven summits. And somewhere along the lines of when you were diagnosed with this burnout, you had this idea or an invitation to climb Everest. So how do you go from burnout to Everest? Take us on that journey.
I think also I didn't understand the severity of my burnout and how long it would take to recover from it. So when we started planning Everest, it was around 2.5-3 years in advance. So I was like, yeah, I want to do this.
Yeah.
And then later I learned, you know, that the severity of my burnout took so long to recover from that it ended up being a borderline that I actually could go. But I did in the end manage to go.
And so what was that process like? Because if you're saying your concentration was bad, your short-term memory was bad, you put on weight, what was your recovery and then training process like to go from burnout to climbing, you know, the world's highest peak?
In the end, I managed to do everything myself because I got the recommendation to relax and, you know, all the things, but it wasn't any system or any approach that I was told to do. But I started to focus on, you know, my health. And when you're healthy, you don't think about your health.
Yeah.
But when you don't have your health, you start to think, okay, what is causing my problems? What can I do? So I've learned a lot about nutrition and the importance of eating healthy and taking extra vitamins, because we love to believe that we eat healthy, all of us or many of us, but still we need to take those extra vitamins to give our body what it needs to function. And I started to do meditations. For me, that was something I've never even thought about doing, but I learned that. And approaching from many angles. I did some acupuncture. I did actually had a coach helping me with a mental challenge of, I've never been sitting on my sofa during the afternoon or even midday. And after, when I was allowed to start training again, my body was in a state where if I worked out for an hour, something I today would say was not a hard workout, I actually needed to rest after it, because if I didn't, I will feel like I had a hangover from a big party the day after. So I actually had to lay down on the sofa or in my bed, maybe sleep for an hour after a workout. And of course, top athletes, they do this, but the rest of us, we don't understand it. Importance of resting.
Yeah. You know? Well, fortunately, you did have someone on the mental side to help you, because I know that you said that you come from a family where it's like you don't You don't rest, you don't sit around, you don't come up with excuses, just get on with it, right?
Yeah.
So we know that you made it to Everest, but it happened to be in 2015 when the earthquake hit.
Yeah.
So where were you? Because as you know, you've seen one of our other luminaries, Derry Llewellyn Davies, who was also on Everest when the earthquake hit. But I think you guys were on different sides.
Yeah.
Tell us where you were.
I was on the Nepalese side, climbing from the south side.
Got it.
And that day we were doing an acclimatation climb. So we were climbing a peak around 10K from Everest Base Camp. And the peak was 6,200 meters high. And on my way, very close, or even on the way up to that peak summit, I had a very uneasy feeling. And in the end, I ended up turning around just before the summit because I knew that I had to turn around.
Wow.
And then I did, and I managed to get the team with me. And as we came down a very, very steep chute, the earthquake started just at the bottom of it. And we got a rock fall coming after us. So
wow.
I think I turned around just about the right time because we managed to run away from it, but it wasn't really far. Those rocks ended up landing where we were standing when the earthquake started. So,
wow. So I find that really fascinating because you and I were talking before about how the Nepalese actually have a term for Everest, and
yeah.
she is a female. And there's a lot of spiritual experiences that I hear from different adventurers when they're on this mountain. So do you think that your body was just picking up something? Because you've told me, like, it's really expensive to plan
yeah.
an expedition to get to Everest. And so to be that close to summit and decide to turn around, I mean, that had to be a really big decision mentally, but it sounds like your body was just giving you a clear signal. Where do you think that comes from?
Well, it was very interesting for me because on my way, when I had this bad feeling and had a feeling I should turn around, because I'm a mental trainer and a coach, I know our brain can trick us a little bit. So I was thinking, you know, am I afraid of, you know, spending my energy climbing this peak and not having enough to actually the Everest summit? So I was thinking, am I my brain tricking me here a little bit? Something with the fear. And then I was like, no, it's not that. But and I normally I would be so eager to tick off and say, yeah, I climbed that peak. But this day I had like a grounding feeling that I just knew 100% that I had to turn around. And I guess because I've had this burnout and I started to learn to listen to my body, because to be able to become burnout, you don't listen anything to your body. I just ignored everything. So in the period in between here, I've actually learned to listen to my body, what it needs. And I guess that was my luck that I had and that I did listen, you know?
Wow. That is so amazing. But I also find that it equally amazing that you did it again. Like you built up the financial resources, kept your body in shape, and you went back to the summit of Everest. But getting all the way to the top, you would think, okay, that's the biggest hurdle. But no, you had a little surprise for you when you got to the top. Tell us about going blind on the top of Mount Everest.
Yeah, I think as a mountaineering person, woman, we always know that the summit is always halfway and it's a lot of hard work to climb down. But experiencing going blind on the summit of Everest, that was like, I wouldn't even think of it as a possibility that it could happen.
But so really, even in your training, because I've heard about, you know, like the high altitude pulmonary edema and brain changes that happen So nobody had trained or alerted you to the fact that you could possibly have temporary blindness?
I know a lot about both pulmonary edema and also, edema affecting your lungs. That is both extremely severe altitude sickness. But I don't know anybody, and I hadn't really heard about anybody going blind. You can get blind from edema in your brain, but that's not what happened to me.
Ah, okay. So tell us what happened.
My eyes, the cornea of my eyes didn't get enough oxygen. So the cornea produces a liquid to protect itself, which again caused me to lose my vision. So I had a doctor who's an expert in altitude to explain everything to me afterwards. And if I got pulmonary edema, I probably wouldn't be here today, because even though I had the medicine for it in my pocket, being blind and to be able to climb from the summit and down, that could be hard. People would normally, or a lot of people would die in that situation, which could have been a worst case for me as well, losing my vision.
Of course. So how does one get off of the mountain if you don't have your vision?
That was, I call it like a world championship in teamwork, because I had a climbing Sherpa that was climbing with me, and thankfully I had opportunity to have another Sherpa helping me. So we were three together of us, and we, you know, they had to be my eyes. So I asked them, you know, guys, please tell me if there's rock, ice, snow. I need to know, because it's kind of hard to feel with your feet and with crampons on. So, and then we were in ropes. So some places I had to rappel, and then one of the guys rappelled down, the other guy fixed my rope, and then I myself would rappel down, and the first guy would tell me, Steve, stop, you're down. So they were, you know, my eyes and the communication between us. And yeah, so it was, it took a long, long time to come climb down, but together we managed. So I'm really, and will forever be grateful for them for helping me. After 24 hours. No, thankfully not. And again, the doctor who told me everything around it, he said, you've been really lucky, because if this sets, it can become permanent. So I was like, ooh, I'm glad I didn't know. And honestly, yeah. Well, first of all, at the time, I did think I was snowblind, because in high altitude, especially, you're so in risk of getting that if you take off your goggles or glasses. So I had good glasses and everything, but I have some problem with my oxygen mask, which caused my glasses to fog up, and then the fog froze, so it became ice on the inside of the glasses. So I had to remove that constantly. And then removing the glasses to fix it, you know, that. So I had like in the back of my mind that this is not good. I've forgotten that I had purchased contact lenses with UV filter to protect me from going snowblind. But I think it was good that I thought I had that problem. So because that's normally something that goes away after 5-6 days. And then I also, because I'm a mental trainer, I'm, you know, my mindset is very strong and I can focus very good. So that helped me a lot, not thinking around what could happen and instead focusing on the positive outcome and how we were going to be able to come down safely.
Well, all of this is now making so much sense, because I know what you're doing today. Like, you're helping organizations and leaders with teams. So it sounds like what you and those Sherpas had was this ultimate trust and great communication that could help you get down the mountain even while blind. So tell me a little bit about what's going on today, like For one, yes, you are a consultant and you're doing these amazing leadership expeditions and such, but you're also planning yet another crazy feat, right?
Yeah. So one of the things I'm planning is that I take people locally here, because we can't travel at the moment, I would take them somewhere for a weekend and challenge them and help them focus on their goals. And also I do some what I call expedition ready training with companies or teams. But I do have some amazing plans for myself, and together with a friend we are going to the North Pole as the first step of that big journey, hopefully in April.
And so why the North Pole? Just because it exists and you want to go to someplace new?
No, I have climbed the seven summits, and to climb, to do, go to the North Pole and also to ski to the South Pole is what is called Explorer's Grand Slam. So I want to do that, and just to top it off with something that nobody have done yet is to climb the seven volcanoes in addition. And so far I've done five of those seven. So two more volcanoes and two poles and I'm there.
I don't even want to ask what you're going to do after that is accomplished. But I do love that what your story has shown is that you can go from complete, utter burnout to really knowing your body and knowing how to train mentally and physically to get in great enough shape that you can go to the world's highest mountain twice, if not more. It's really, really incredible. Well, Siv, thank you again for sharing your story in this book. I think it's definitely going to inspire people, and I love how you've broken down how your sleep, your body, the nutrition, all of the things that you needed to do to recover from burnout. So for anyone else who's dealing with it, I think it's going to be very, very helpful.
Yeah, I hope that I can, help somebody to see that, to have a burnout, it's not the end of the world. Most likely it's going to be maybe a year or two of your life, which is not much. And to focus that you can get very healthy and come strong back from it. Because we are so much stronger than we think, and all of us can do so much more than we believe. So if I can help inspire somebody to do that, I would be really grateful for it.
Yes, well, that's what you're doing on your website, Aim Lofty. You're encouraging people to create big dreams, big goals, and go after them and not get too complacent in your comfort zone, right?
Yeah. I think it's when we go outside our comfort zone, that's where we can really feel that we're living, and, so many amazing things can happen for us.
So true. Well, I love it. Well, we will be following along this new expedition going to the North Pole and beyond. So for those of you who are interested, definitely read Siv's story in Holistic Healing and check out her website so that you can subscribe to her newsletter where she shares tips from her expeditions and how you can apply them in your own life or in your business. And of course, you can follow along on the expedition and support her and her friend Håkon, who are going on this crazy, crazy adventure. I love seeing the preparation that's going into it. So be sure to connect with Siv online.
Yeah, thank you.
My pleasure. Well, there you have it, my friends. Get your copy of the book. And remember, you are so much stronger, so much more resilient than you know. Sometimes it just takes a little bit of holistic healing. Bye for now.
Bye.
Listening to the Innate Vitality Code podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend, rate the podcast, and subscribe. This helps me with getting my message out to a wider audience. For show notes and other episodes, visit innatevitality.com/podcast. That's vitality.com/podcast. You can also sign up for my free masterclass series, Each month, I take a deep dive into the topics of holistic healing, resilience, trauma recovery, and self-love. Just visit innatevitality.com.